Hello, I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. The 77th World Health Assembly is underway in Geneva, Switzerland this week. Several African countries are calling for urgent action to address inequalities in healthcare access for mothers, babies, and children. We will have a discussion on the subject. But first, Uganda has rolled out a nationwide yellow fever vaccination campaign to protect its population against the mosquito-borne disease that has long posed a threat. Uganda health authorities say they have vaccinated 12.2 million of the 14 million people targeted by the end of April. Uganda will now require everyone traveling to and from the country to have a yellow fever vaccination card as an international health regulation. The East African nation, with 45 million people, is one of 27 countries on the African continent classified by the WHO as at high risk for yellow fever outbreaks. The World Health Assembly, or WHA, kicked off in Geneva this Monday. The annual meeting brings together the 194 member states of the WHO to agree on the agency's leadership, budget, and policies. A major focus of the gathering is universal health care coverage, health, and well-being. This year, several African countries are calling for urgent action to address inequalities in healthcare access for mothers, babies, and children. WHO statistics show the problem is particularly acute in sub-Saharan Africa. About 70% of all maternal deaths took place in the region in 2020. Maternal, newborn, and child mortality is a preventable problem. So why does it persist in African parts of, in Africa and parts of the world? My guests today are from the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation, or EGPAF. Rhoda Igweta is the foundation's Africa Regional Director for Public Policy and Advocacy. Rhoda, thank you for joining us on Health Chat.
Thank you, Lenore.
And Dr. Sajida Kimambo is a physician, a public health expert, and EGPAF's country director in Tanzania. They are both joining us from Geneva. Dr. Kimambo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lenore, for having us.
First off, let's understand the issue. And I will start with you, Dr. Kimambo. Maternal, newborn, and child mortality is a preventable problem. Talk to us about the issue. Why does it persist in sub-Saharan Africa, and what are the factors driving death rates?
Thank you, Lenovo. Let me start with the data on the state of affairs. The Sustainable Development Goals had set the target to reduce maternal mortality and child mortality. And the target for maternal mortality reduction is less than 70% per 100,000 live deaths. However, it is estimated that over 300 women will die in childbirth, or over 100,000 women that are giving live deaths by 2030. So clearly you can see that, maternal mortality remains high, as you have correctly said. Also, going down to the infant mortality rate, sharing a day again on the data, the regional infant mortality rate stands at 72% per 1,000 live deaths. And it is expected that there will be 54 deaths per 1,000 live deaths by 2030. So some of the reasons that contribute to persistent maternal, newborn, and child mortality in the sub-Saharan Africa includes, first, limited access to quality healthcare services that leads to shortages of skilled healthcare professions. Just to share the data from WHO in 2020, the World Health Organization reports a ratio of 1.55 healthcare workers, meaning physicians, nurses, and midwives, per 1,000 people, which is below the WHO threshold density of 4.45 healthcare workers per 1,000 people. So you can clearly see that there is a huge gap when it comes to the healthcare workforce that is available to support the community.
Okay.
I can also allude to the number of birth attendants in Africa as well. There is 65% of birth 65% of birth are attended by skilled health work personnel, and this is below the average that is has been set by 2030, which is 90%. So clearly, you can see that a shortage of skilled healthcare workforce continues to be a persistent challenge in the sub-Saharan Africa. The second reason that I could also attest to is an inadequate investment in health and funding for health programs. Many countries have not reached their health expenditure target for the Abuja Declaration, which is 15% expenditure on health. But we also understand that there are a number of other challenges that are limiting these countries to be able to achieve the Abuja targets on health expenditure. Of course, issues around climate change, conflicts, and global health emergencies continue to limit the African countries to be able to expand and cover the budget that has been set for the Abuja Declaration.
Okay.
Other reasons include socioeconomic challenges such as poverty, lack of education, that all lead to, you know, poor nutrition, poor water supply, sanitation, as well as hygiene, that all contribute to poor outcomes for maternal and child health.
So it's a very complex issue, as you clearly explained. There are so many different challenges and different layers when it comes to the issue of maternal, newborn, and child mortality. Rhoda Igweta, let me come to you. The well-being of mothers and babies, children, is high on the agenda at the World Health Assembly. Both of you are currently attending the assembly at in Geneva right now. Now, Somalia is leading a resolution on maternal and newborn and child mortality. What does this resolution propose?
Yeah, so the challenges that my colleague Sajida has alluded to is the reason why Somalia is proposing this resolution. So I think there is a recognition that we are really off the mark when it comes to the Sustainable Development Goal number 3, that is focusing on addressing the maternal and infant mortality. And Sajida has shared with us those statistics. So Somalia recognizing not just the challenges at a global level, but also the challenges that they are facing as a country, are mobilizing other countries to pay much more political attention. Remember that the World Health Assembly is an opportunity for different member states to come and to reaffirm their commitments around the significant issues, and also to hold each other to account. So what the first thing that is really important is really to bring attention to the issue that we are off track, and that at the rate that we are going right now, 4 out of 5 countries will not achieve the maternal mortality target, the national mortality target, to reduce that, the maternal mortality. And then when it comes to child death, that about 63 countries will meet the under 5 mortality targets by 2030. So the first thing is to raise awareness. The second is to really inspire and motivate action amongst the member states. The World Health Organization also is being tasked by this, through this resolution, to take action to support countries so that they can have the technical support. Partners, donors, stakeholders can mobilize their resources to address the challenges that have been highlighted. So those are the main things that the resolution is intending to do.
And Dr. Sajida, coming back to you, you are the country director in Tanzania for ECPAF, as we mentioned earlier. Can you give us a picture of the issue in Tanzania briefly. What are, if you were to point us to some of the most critical challenges when it comes to the health of mothers and babies, what would you say?
Yeah, well, no, thank you, Leno. So the issues, again, that affect the health of mothers and babies in Tanzania are not unique. I think some of the challenges that are also affecting other African countries are also experienced in Tanzania. One is around, you know, lack of access for supplies and medicine, essential supplies and medicine, as well as, you know, healthcare workforce, as I have mentioned. The number of doctors or the numbers of the healthcare workforce that are supposed to meet the needs of the community in Tanzania are also low. That is also another reason that continues to affect the maternal and child health outcome. Accessibility in terms of geography, majority of the community also lives in hard-to-reach area, which make it very difficult for them to access health facilities at the site. At the facility level. And another reason that I could mention is the fact that the healthcare system traditionally has been really facility-based, I would say, right? We focused a lot on the facility healthcare, leaving the community community health component. And it's high time that we really work on bringing all building a strong system that responds to the continuum of care from facility to community care. Okay. And maybe the last point that I could mention as well is leadership to promote or to support maternal and child health. I think in Tanzania, we have examples where we have seen the leadership from the Minister of Health really driving this agenda forward. And actually this morning, we were in a panel where Tanzania was sharing an example on how they have achieved the reduction of maternal mortality for over 500 deaths, 100,000 live deaths, to 104 deaths in 5 years. And the success was alluded to the leadership and support from the national level, regional level, council level, as well as the site level.
That's great. This is a very interesting outcome there. Now, Rhoda, coming back to what is happening in Geneva, what is the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation, as part of civil society, advocating for at the World Health Assembly? And what do you hope the session, as we mentioned with regards to Somalia, will accomplish?
Thank you, Lenore. So The Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation really focuses on pushing an equity-based approach. As an organization that has worked in the area of ending pediatric AIDS for a long time, one of the things that we have noticed is that children continue to be left behind when it comes to provision of services, availability of treatment, and generally innovations that provide the best outcomes for children. So the first thing is that we really do focus on pushing an approach that will ensure that there's equitable access of services, of treatment for children, but not just in the HIV space, but on a more broader level. And for us to be able to do that, we also then have to pay attention to women who are the ones who are giving birth to children and taking care of them in the home setup. And particularly also with the increase in new infections amongst young people, so also having a big focus on adolescents and youth. So really making sure that there's that equity-based approach and ensuring that we are focused on the individual from a holistic level and advocating for their human rights. And what is important for us when it comes to this resolution is that that it is passed and that it protects the rights of women, and that we ensure that children are protected as well, and to ensure that the systems are supporting, the policies are in place to support those actions at country level, so that we have the most successful outcomes for these populations that we are focused on. So that is what we are advocating for, And that is what we hope to see at the end of this week.
And is what Somalia is proposing sufficient to address maternal, newborn and child health in sub-Saharan Africa? If not, what else should not be left out?
Yeah, I would say that what Somalia is proposing and supported by a good number of countries, both on the African continent and beyond, is really critical and is an important catalytic action. They are reminding us that we've got to pay attention, that we're not doing well when it comes to the targets that have been set out. So that's the first and most important thing. I will say for anybody who takes the time to look at the resolution, it really is a reminder of what member states have committed to in the past, and that we've got to really wake up to the reality that if we don't change the course that we are taking, that we will not attain those targets and we'll continue to lose women and children in the coming years. So this is really an urgent call to action. But it's also an important time for us to, for Somalia to mobilize countries to reflect. I mean, the fact that there's been quite a number of conversations on this is also holding nations to account to say, how are we doing? What are we doing? What do we need to pay attention to? And speaking to the issues that the challenges that Sajida alluded to, how do we resource our response so that we're making sure that we do not leave any woman or child behind in provision of health services?
And Dr. Kimambo, you are in Geneva as part of a Tanzanian delegation of health experts and civil society. Give us a snapshot of the work you do in Tanzania in eliminating mother-to-child transmission of HIV.
Thank you, Leno. Let me go back to the history when we started PMCCT services in Tanzania. We started it way back in 2000. ESOP started the HIV program, or the PMTC, Prevention of Mother-to-Child Transmission Program, with PEPFAR. And we celebrated 22 years last year, same age as PEPFAR. And we have seen massive progress when it comes to the reduction of mother-to-child transmission of HIV in Tanzania. So when we were starting PMCCT, or Prevention of Mother-to-Child Transmission program, way back in 2000, of 100 mothers that were giving birth, right? Of 100 mothers that were HIV infected, that were giving birth, 25% or 25 of the mothers were passing the virus to their children. And last year, Tanzania has made progress in such a way that of 100 mothers in 2022 who are giving birth, only 6% of them are transmitting the virus to their children. And that is a huge success in PMCCT program. And we will really like to thank the government of Tanzania for giving ESOP the opportunity to be able to contribute, whether it's scaling up service delivery to reach hard-to-reach areas, whether it's improving laboratory testing, whether it's, you know, linking community and facility care, being part of the partners of other partners in the region, working hand in hand with the government to scale up PMTCT, or prevention of mother-to-child transmission approaches in Tanzania. And we are grateful on the work that has been done and the milestone that has been achieved. Of course, the transmission rate is still 6%. Should we relax as experts that, you know, the transmission is over? No. Would want to continue to work with the government to make sure that until no child has AIDS, until no mother, HIV-positive mother, is transmitting the virus to the child.
That's great. And we will continue the conversation in a moment. Rhoda and Dr. Sajida, don't go away. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. We'll have more on our discussion with Rhoda Igweta and Dr. Sajida Kimambo in a moment. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. If you are just joining us, the World Health Assembly is taking place this week in Geneva, Switzerland, and several African countries are calling for urgent action to address inequalities in healthcare access for mothers, babies, and children. My guests today are Rhoda Igweta, Africa Regional Director for Public Policy and Advocacy with the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation, and Dr. Sajita Kimambo, a physician, a public health expert, and the foundation's country director in Tanzania. They are both joining me from Geneva. Now, to you, Rhoda, the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation works in 18 countries in Africa to eliminate pediatric AIDS, and Dr. Kimambo explained some of the work they're doing in Tanzania. You do have a good health system. To have good health system in general, right, you need a combined commitment, whether it's from the government and international NGOs and local players. You also need to advocate for it. What does the advocacy side of your work in Africa look like?
So just to start with, our organization really is founded on the shoulders of strong advocacy. Our organization was founded by three moms who came together around a table to get action for research for pediatric HIV and AIDS. So based on that, our experience has been that it's really important for advocacy, both on the technical side and the political side, to support the programmatic work that we do, the service delivery work that we do, because as somebody mentioned today, health is political. Health must be supported by political action to get the resourcing, to have the policies in place, to make sure that the legislation is there, and that the social environment that is required to implement effective programs is supported adequately. So our advocacy really revolves around taking the data from our programs to see, to analyze and to see what we are seeing, what gaps are in place, and then really take the steps to collaborate with other partners, with networks, with donors, and with various stakeholders to ensure that we are implementing the most successful programs that have the highest impact. So you cannot have a health system that doesn't speak to the various actors, and not just in the health space, in the health space and beyond. So recognizing that, you know, the health resourcing needs to be supported by engaging with ministries of health. You're going to have programs that are educating the public, and that might be through, you know, it might be with faith-based leaders, so you're working with churches, with mosques, with temples, et cetera, or you're going to schools and collaborating with the Ministry of Education, et cetera, et cetera. So really convening, we play a convening role in bringing all the stakeholders together so they can be able to build that foundation to drive effective programs. That is where our strength is in terms of translating that work and making sure that we have a very enabling environment to implement successful programs.
Dr. Kimambo, to tackle the high burden of HIV infections, UNAIDS has established the 95-95-95 targets. Walk us through what those targets mean and how well African countries are faring in meeting those targets.
Thanks. Yeah, so the success of PEPFAR is measured through the UNAIDS 95-95 target, which means that 95% of people who are HIV infected are aware of the HIV positive status. And the second 95% of people who are HIV infected are on treatment or are on antiretroviral therapy, and the third 90, relates to the viral load suppression. That 95% of HIV infected people who are on treatment are virally suppressed. And through these metrics, many countries in the sub-Saharan Africa, a number of countries are closer to achieving the 95-95 epidemic goals, and a few countries have achieved that. So, however, for pediatrics,
things are, the metrics are not looking good for pediatrics because pediatrics are still behind on the 95 cascade, and I think globally we are less than 70% across the 390s. And even at country level in Tanzania, we are less than 70%, actually. We are on the 60s for the first 90, especially the second 90 and the third 90. So clearly challenges exist on the pediatric treatment cascade, and we need to invest more on this area to make sure that all children who are yet to be identified and put on treatment are put on treatment.
Okay, and ladies, we have a few minutes left, and I hope we can get more in this very important discussion. Rhoda, Dr. Kimambo mentioned PEPFAR. Here in the United States, there's a lot of debate and concern over the future of PEPFAR, the U.S. President Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. The future of PEPFAR, which has saved millions of lives, according to report, especially in Africa, is now uncertain, as some observers say. How important is PEPFAR and its authorization to the work you do in African countries?
I will say that PEPFAR's work is absolutely critical in the work that we do and in resourcing the HIV response, but also the broader health system globally. In particular, I want to acknowledge that, you know, if you look at the history of PEPFAR, it was an emergency response. And over time, the resourcing that has been provided through PEPFAR has supported a lot of countries to not only respond to the HIV crisis that we saw in the late 80s and the 90s, to help to build sustainable response and to build very strong health systems. So I will say that the PEPFAR reauthorization is absolutely critical. It is life-saving. And the other thing that is really important is the role that PEPFAR has played in terms of getting support globally to get the world to pay attention to this issue. If there was any pulling back at this point, it really would be detrimental, and we would see a spike in infections all over again. So the work that has been done around prevention, around ensuring access to treatment, and care, supporting communities, supporting country budgets that the various countries are able to pull together, coming together and ensuring that that response is strong and is resourced, is going to really suffer if PEPFAR were to pull out at this point. So for me, I really hope that we can see a continued support as we move forward.
Dr. Kimambo, before we wrap, what do you find are the most persistent challenges or obstacle to ending AIDS in children, youth, and families today? And if you could point to one solution, I know it's a big question, but we're running out of time. If we can, you can summarize it for us.
No, thank you. There are a number of challenges. One is related to the diagnostic challenges, the HIV diagnosis in children. Is particularly challenging. It's complex compared to adults. And the second challenge that we see is on stigma and the discrimination, as well as, you know, the point that I would like to pone on in terms of, you know, proposed solutions that we could implement to be able to address that gap is related to policy and funding gap for pediatric HIV. So the funding streams and most of the time, the funding stream are really allocating resources for adults. However, the pediatric budget is not necessarily, you know, enough to be able to address the need for pediatric HIV care and treatment. And I think that's an area where we can continue to hone on to make sure that we are setting funds specific for pediatric HIV.
Thank you so much, ladies. We have to leave it there. We are out of time. We thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Leno.
That is all for this edition of Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Mokbilia Barrow. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.